You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh well, guess beggars can't be choosy. Wanted to receive attention from my music. Wanted to be left alone in public, excuse me. But wanting my cake and eat it too. And wanting it both ways. Fame made me a balloon. Cause my ego inflated when I blew sleep. It was confusing. Cause all I wanted to do was be the Bruce Lee of loosely abused ink. Use it as a tool when I blew steam. Woo! Hit the lottery, ooh wee. But with what I gave up for getting was bittersweet. It was like winning a used me. I'm blind cause I think I'm getting so huge. I need a shrink. I'm beginning to lose sleep. One sheep, two sheep, going cuckoo and kooky is cool key. But I'm acting weirder than you think. Cause
I'm friends with the mom.
Good Wednesday morning to you. Hump day for most of us on the planet. You know, you can't even turn on the TV anymore without just watching nothing but strife. I don't know if we turn on the TV to watch anything good, but hopefully you don't. And now, you used to be able to take refuge in sports, right? Well, you can't in football anymore, that's for sure. Nobody watches basketball, so who cares about that? And, I watch baseball. So it's just the great part of the season for baseball. Last week, since they added the wild card, you've got, I don't know how many teams are still in it, but you've had, a lot of teams still in it till last week. Most of the races have been decided, but sports used to be a place where you could escape, no more. So, congratulations to everybody on that. The best part is about that stuff. I don't even think they know what they're fighting about anymore. Like, what's the cause? Where are we kneeling? Injustice. Yeah, injustice. Okay, now what? Nothing, just injustice. Okay, man, I'm down with it. And don't tell me I can't protest either. Okay, you can do whatever you want. How about, though, if we protest your protest? So, anyway. I'm getting a little sick and tired of that. Sports is politics. Who needs it, right? Anyway, Secretary of Defense in Afghanistan today. A couple hours before he got there, somebody shelled the airport. Always an interesting event. We had one in Afghanistan where, now I wasn't near the airport. It was a different big firm base. But I want to say the Secretary of Defense was inbound. And and then they had somebody got into a vehicle from the Afghan compound and tried to ram a vehicle in, I think it was the Secretary of Defense's motorcade. Yeah, that got a few people's attention. So, anyway. And then there was a time in Ramadi in 2004 where I want to say Ambassador Bremer was inbound to Ramadi. And our LZ, I don't know if it was the LZ, but we started taking incoming mortar round. and General Mattis, he literally he was running into the LZ to make sure that they did not they didn't land. Now maybe he didn't want to meet with Ambassador Bremer that day, and mortar rounds in the area were a good reason to get him out of there. I don't know, but he was anyway. He landed anyway today in Kabul. So Secretary of Defense there doing his thing. We are going to talk to John Ubaldi today. We'll do current events, a little bit of roundtable stuff, and we'll talk about what's in the news. And so we'll do that this morning. You know, I kind of interesting. I was watching the Vietnam right episode. I didn't even finish episode 8. I was like, I can't do this anymore. It's like it's too awful. I've had enough tonight. Click, and I shut it off, and I went to bed last night. So I've got to finish watching episode 8, which is kind of interesting. I mean, it's the further down the road you go to Vietnam. And then, you know, there's still, you know, wounds that come with it. And one of them is, how do you, the whole I went to Canada thing, you know, and they had a guy in there talking about, you know, I've been called a coward for my whole life. I don't know how you, I mean, is it better to go to jail? Serve your time for refusing to serve than to leave your country? I don't know. But for the rest of your life, you're a coward? That's rough. That's rough. And so he recounts the story where he had a Vietnam veteran said, hey, I'll drive you, don't go. I don't know that I could have done that. I'm probably not the right guy to have that conversation with, but nonetheless, that's a heavy... To be called a coward, your life, whoa, that's rough. So, anyway, good morning to you. We'll check the news of the day here. Trump administration rolling out their version of revamping the tax code. So that in the news today. Puerto Rico in the news, as is the ongoing recoveries. In Florida and Houston, back in the news yesterday because the governor and the mayor of Houston are having a fight over money. So, in fact, I had a guy call me and on a completely different issue was talking about Houston and their historical desire not to have any strings attached to federal aid that comes after disaster. And they can do that. They get away with that in part because of the concentration of the petroleum industry that's down in the Houston area. That they have that kind of juice that they can lean on Congress to get waivers for stuff. And what he was specifically talking about was, you know, when you have a natural disaster like that, normally FEMA comes in and says, hey, look, see that area that you turned into housing? After that dike got built, we're not going to allow that anymore. You're going to buy those people out so they can go someplace else, and that's going to get turned into green space because we're not going to do this again. Yeah, and the potential for this to happen again is great. So we're not going to do this again. Houston evidently has successfully pushed back on that. So his point was, how do you do that? How does that happen? Why would Houston be allowed that, well, you know, like, follow the money. As Deep Throat said, follow the money. Another interesting story that we'll talk about here in a few minutes is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, a personal friend of mine, Joe Dunford. Gonna get awkward, I'm not going to lie to you, though. Yankees, Red Sox, right in the thick of it. So anyway, there's a story in Military Times that he said he advised administration officials to let all qualified individuals serve in the military. a view that was ignored when the White House announced its ban on transgender troops this summer. So again, the question then becomes, all qualified, worldwide deployable. And then the question then becomes, can you switch sexes while you're on active duty? I say no. I say for the period of your enlistment, you're going to be one sex. So, and again, we don't care that you're changing sexes. You're just a widget, all right? So all qualified, that implies widget. Widget, not widget. Over there. Widget, not widget. Over there. I was a widget, now I'm a not widget. Okay, you're going to be med boarded and separated. All right, you're going to get an admin discharge. You're going to get whatever you get. But you are not a widget. Those little noises, that's me moving you. What, like with some kind of robot moving you. So that's what it's about. Nobody cares what sex you are. You could be whatever kind of sex you want. We don't care. Yeah, in fact, I mean, I joked before, just for the sake of amusement, man, it'd be interesting to have a few of them around, right? Marines would love that stuff. Be a hoot. But yeah, I don't think it's a DOD's business to park you on the sidelines for X number of years, pay you while you redesign your body and your mind to be a different gender. I don't think that's right. So anyway, we'll talk about that though. We'll get a little bit into, you know, General Dunford's comments on that. So a very good, almost October. How about that? September 27th. I had two nephews that were murdered in 1996, and it just dawned on me. I think it was September 26th. Yeah. Yeah, so that's what that long hiss was for. One more thing. As if the political scene can't get 4 and 6 years old, father shot him in the head. Yeah. My sister told him she was leaving, and he went in the closet. He had threatened to do it. Went in the closet, got his pistol. He beat her, and they were in the bedroom watching TV. He walked in and he shot the younger boy in the head, and the older one ran. He chased the older one through the house till he caught him, and then he shot him in the head, and then he put the gun in his mouth and killed himself. I tell people when we talk about post-traumatic stress that the toughest person on the planet that I know is my older sister, Peggy. You know, that I know a lot of people that have been through rough shit. None of them does it involve their kid. Not one of them does it involve their kid. And Peggy, she's doing all right. She's doing all right. I mean, again, God hasn't invented the time to heal that wound, right? So whenever I need inspiration, I don't have to look far. You know, and in fact, in our family. Oh, you think you have it rough? Right? Yeah, probably not. Probably not. So, yeah. What is that? 21 years ago? Yeah, it's easily the ugliest thing I've ever seen or been a part of in my life. You know, 4 and 6 years old, little kids. And then, you know, dealing with small caskets, things like that. Explaining to your kids what happened. My dad was managing the Angels, so it was on ESPN that day. And people, you know, that you're going to go to hockey practice, people will know about it. Will their kids say something? So So I called someplace and was talking to them that does, you know, helps people that go through domestic violence. And I said, what do I say to my kid? You know, my kids are 9 and, you know, 6. And they say, well, somehow you're going to have to disconnect a parent's anger from what happened today. And I said, how do I do that? And they said, you know your kids. You'll figure it out. And I said, okay. So, you know, almost to script what they told me would happen, happened. I went, John, my oldest, the captain was 9 or 10, and he was home after school. And I said, hey, I'm going to go get a haircut. You want to come with me? And he said, no. And I said, well, good. You're coming anyway, so get in the car. So he gets in the car, and he looks at me, and he says, am I in trouble? And I said, no. And so we go to get his brother, the lieutenant, who was 6, and he was playing at a friend's house. Might have been 6 or 7. I can't remember how old Patrick was. And he's playing at a friend's house, and then from the friend's house, the friend's mom was going to take he and his friend to go to hockey practice. So John and I pull up in front of the house in San Diego, and he sees, you know, he's running across the front yard when he sees the car. And he stops. And he says, no, Mrs. Comer is going to take me to hockey practice. And I said, nah, man, you got to come with me. And he says, but I said, get in the car now. So Patrick gets in the car. He's a little guy. His feet didn't even touch the floor of the car, right? And he gets in the car, and he buckles his seatbelt, and he looks, and he says, am I in trouble? And I said, no. So we're driving, and now I'm thinking, like, well, what do I say? You know, we're here. What do I say? And I just said, hey, today something really bad happened. And they looked at me, and they said, what? And I said, my nephew's names are Tori and Tyler. And I said, Tori and Tyler were killed today. And they said, what happened, Dad? And I said, no, John said, did they get into a car accident? And this is where it kind of goes by script. And I said, no, their dad shot and killed him with a gun. Patrick says, Dad, why would a dad kill their kid with a gun? Now, I mean, like they told me, they said, they'll ask it. And I said, you know, Patrick, sometimes people go crazy, and when they go crazy, they do crazy things. I said, but they're with God now, and nobody can ever hurt him again. And so, you know, my sister, though, Peggy, I mean, she got beat up bad, and then she ran out of the house, and then she remembered the threat and ran back in. She's calling 911 when they told me that you hear the first gunshot in the background. And the paramedics are in the house. I knew one of the paramedics. I mean, Sacramento, our hometown, right? And, you know, we all grew up there. My family's been there forever. And so we know a lot of people. I knew one of the paramedics. And he was telling me, he said, you know, we came in the house, and your sister was there, and she had her two boys near her, and she was holding them, and she just looked up and said, can you help me? You know, she's just being a mom. So it was, I don't know where this came, but I'll finish the story. The things that you never forget, when we were Catholic, right? So we have this thing called the rosary that's kind of morphed into what's now a memorial service, but, for Catholics, the day before the funeral, normally the evening before the funeral, you gather and you say the rosary. So we get there early, and my dad and I, and along with my sister and the rest of our family, and kind of like who's going to be where and what happens and all the rest of that stuff. And honestly, you know, you're still so numb to what happened. It's just not believable. So, you know, my dad and I talk. It's like, okay, she's probably not going to make it. When we come around the corner and the two caskets are there, and the caskets were open, and the boys had baseball hats on. My dad was with the Angels, so they had a little California Angel baseball caps on, and because they had gunshot wounds to the head. And so they're in their little suits, and I said, when we get around this corner, she's not going to make it. And so make sure you have a hold of her tight. And he's like, okay, okay. And so, but it was being physically connected to somebody like that and feeling, you know, that you hear that wailing, that those noises that people don't normally make, and to be physically connected, you know, still gives me chills thinking about it. But we got down to the casket, and my sister knelt down, and she was just like a mom tucking her kids in, and I remember she just kept saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry, and she touched her youngest son, named Tyler. He's a little hellion, right? So anyway, his hands are crossed on his chest, and she takes her hand and she touches him while she's talking to him. And when her hand touched her hand recoiled back. And I'm standing next to her, and I said, what's wrong? She said, he's so cold. She said, would you go get a blanket? And I said, sure. So I went and I found the funeral director, and I said, I need two blankets. And he looked at me, and I said, I don't have time to talk to you. Just give me two blankets. And he said, okay. And so, you know, I went and he found the two blankets. So I take them down. And then, you know, she's just a mom tucking her kids in and talking to them. And it's just, so that's what I say. In terms of post-traumatic stress, and we talk about it a fair amount on the program, nobody's been, in my life experience, nobody's dealt with it more than my sister. In fact, we were just back from my youngest sister's wedding in Indianapolis, and my son, the captain, and I were cleaning out my Peggy's garage, my oldest sister, and you know, she still has the papers that, you know, from her boy's schoolwork and all that stuff in boxes and stuff like that. And, but you know, one of the things that about domestic violence, you know, she and I were talking that morning, and it kind of full circle here. I've told the story about I'm a captain out 29 Palms, and a helicopter crashes into my assembly area. The pilot decapitated, the co-pilot crushed to death. Crew chief and another Marine just riding along, just are fighting for their lives. We're trying to save them. It's not working. I've told that story before. But anyway, out of that, my company, Gunny, gave me probably the best advice I've ever got in my life, which is, we haven't even started the show yet, by the way, which is, you'll never get over this. And he and I talked about what that meant. And I gave my sister that advice. I said, you know, there's going to be people that tell you things, but I want you to know God hasn't invented the time to heal this wound, you know, but you'll learn to live with it. In time, you'll learn to coexist with it. And so, but people are going to say all this crazy stuff to you, don't believe any of it. I said, but you can't take your own life, because she was talking about killing herself. I said, if you kill yourself, he wins. He wins. So, and so when I got up to Sacramento, I was in San Diego. When I got to Sacramento, I think the next day, her friends came up to me, and she said, they said, I'd never met most of them, and they said, could we ask you, what did you say to her at the police station? And I said, I told her she couldn't kill herself. That, if she did, he wins. And that's what he wanted to do, was ruin her life. And so you can never let him win. And the other thing was that she'll never get over this, no matter what people will say. And, you know, so that advice that has echoed through my life that I got from Vietnam veterans, right, via a gunnery sergeant by the name of Lance Y, who I'm sure the Vietnam guys got it from Korea and World War II guys, who got it from guys who fought in Latin America and World War I,
Hey, get out of here.
Joe announces himself this morning. Has echoed through the life of my family. Yeah, post-traumatic stress. How do you coexist with it? And, and over the course of the years, you know, Peggy and I have talked about, you know, the desire to make the pain go away. You know, when does suicide become a viable alternative? And I think it's helped that, you know, that we can talk about that. So, anyway, 21 years ago, I believe yesterday. So to, Tori and Tyler were two little kids. Tori liked to play with Barbies. My kids used to give him a rough time. But anyway, they were good little dudes. The show will begin right now. John Ubaldi is going to join us in a few minutes. Good morning to you.
Can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
You know, I'll give you the moral of the story, or at least one of them. I used to get asked to do a lot of public speaking when I lived up in North Dakota. I did my radio show, right? I'd been elected to the city council. I coached the high school baseball team. So, And I'd go talk to groups of students, and I'd give them what I called the keys of life. If you do these things, you'll live a great life. Respect, discipline, hard work, and toughness. Life's not for pussies. Question is, when you get kicked in the stomach 6 times, are you tough enough to grit your teeth and get up the 7th time? Because if you get up the 7th time, you win. And as I said, I don't have to look very far in my family for an example of that. But it's true. I mean, if you raise your kids to be pussies, they're going to be living in your basement, man. They're going to be living in your basement. And that's why the whole helicopter parent thing and intervening in their grades and all that shit, you're killing your own kids. You got to equip them with the tools. And the single tool that, in my opinion, they need is how to overcome. How to work hard to overcome. How to persevere. How to grit your teeth. And our parents, I think, did that pretty good for us. So when you intercede and you treat them like little babies, at some point you're going to pay for it. Yeah. Hope you like them living with you. Anyway, but that's one of the lessons that I extracted from all of them. But my sister's doing all right. She just sold her house recently. She's going to move back to California, back to Sacramento, where she has a lot of friends. She moved back to Indianapolis. Helped my youngest sister raise her 4 kids and work, and I think that obviously was a huge part of Peggy's life. And kids are all in college and gone. My younger sister just got remarried, so Peggy, it's time for me to go find my friends and have a good time. So she's moving, so that'll happen here in a few weeks, I think. She'll finally physically move, but you know, again, if you can imagine that, you know, I didn't think she'd still be alive after all these years. And, yeah, rough shit. So, I mean, I speak about that, domestic violence. I went to a thing about a year ago at USC and spoke about it. So, and, you know, the story blows people away, you know, as it should. It's horrible. Domestic violence is absolutely brutal in this country. And it, I would tell you, and around the world, so wherever you go, you see it. It pisses me off. The weather, mostly sunny and 80 in Quantico, cloudy and 81 at Camp Lejeune, sunny and 75. Are these temperatures are all? No. Cloudy and 75 in Granbury, Texas. Yeah, they were a little bit warmer, so I didn't know if I had updated them, but I did. Sunny and 44 degrees in Big Timber, Montana. 29 Palms, a little bit cool this morning. Sunny and 66, Kent Pendleton. Sunny and 50. Yikes. Okinawa, dark, cloudy and 84. In Rockets, cooled off a little bit. Fall is coming. That's right. Sunny and 89. Marja, clear, dark and 87 at the home of All Marine Radio. It is cloudy, 60 degrees. Headed for a high today of 81, which violates my 80 degree rule in California near the coast. So we're going to take a quick break. John Ubaldi will join us next as we get rolling here on Wednesday. Don't touch that dial.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
My shit's ragged, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm working on it, though. Jackson Brown. Jackson Brown's good to go. Alright, let me read you a couple of emails. Well, this one's entitled This Morning. So, I got to work. Started working. 9 o'clock rolled around here. I fire up All Marine Radio. I put on my headset. And my jaw hits the desk as you start talking about the murder of your two nephews. I have listened to this program for close to a year now. And I had no idea, Mac. I've never heard you speak of it. First of all, I just want to say, so sorry that something like that would have to touch your life. God bless your sister. Her boys are already with the Almighty. And I won't even go into my thoughts relative to somebody who could do that to two little kids. I have to say, I sat here doing nothing but listening to you as you spoke about it. Certainly gives a different perspective to post-traumatic stress. I say thanks for sharing, but I know you'll laugh at that and scoff at it. Please give all of our love to your sister. Wow. Semper Fidelis. Here's another one. Mac, way to screw up a perfectly good morning. Thoughts and prayers to your sister. The other thing I wanted to say is you talked about toughness. And I could not agree with you more. I grew up in a family with an alcoholic father, an absent mother, and it was just me and my sister. Thankfully, we've turned out to be good people. But it certainly wasn't because of parenting. And I will tell you this. Your comment about toughness is spot on. I didn't ask for the family I got born into. I didn't ask for the shit they did to me. But for some reason, both my sister and I had better compasses than our parents. We knew the stuff that they were doing was wrong. And we had other people in our lives, coaches, teachers, and whatnot, who emphasized good things to us. And we've turned out to lead productive, good lives, both of us, and try to pass that on to our families. But I love one of the things you say. It's neither profound nor articulate. And that is, life's not for pussies. It's not. I heard you say once that you'll fight for every bit of happiness that you get on this planet. And you are exactly right about that. I try to pass that on to my kids. I try to love them. But let them fail, so I teach them the value of toughness and how you come back from failure. Appreciate the show. Much love to you, your family, in particular your sister and those two boys. God bless you. First of all, thank you for the email. I don't know where that came from this morning, but I was looking at the just looking at the date, and I'm not even sure if that's the date. It was September, but yeah, my first encounter really with post-traumatic stress is, you know, the incident with my company. The second, you know, big event in my life that involved post-traumatic stress is, you know, Peggy. And, you know, I remember talking to my parents about her, and both of my parents, you know, wanted Peggy to come live with them. And I said, Peggy needs professional help. right? Parenting is not what you can't parent her through this. Okay. And I said, and so let me tell you some things that I've learned. When does suicide become a rational act? And my mom looked at me like, what are you talking about? I said, answer me that. When does suicide become a rational act? And my mom, she thought, my mom's a smart woman. And I said, it becomes a rational act when it makes the pain go away. I said, Mom, who's going to live with more pain than you know than Peggy? Losing kids is one thing. To be there when your children are shot in the head? I said, are you kidding me? I mean, and so then, you know, in my deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan, I mean, I've always been mindful of it. You know, nobody that I know who deals with heavy shit, none of it was their kid. Good friends, yes. That's not your kid, though. And so, I mean, honestly, the toughest person I know is my older sister. And it certainly changed my life. I mean, I remember sitting at their funeral and thinking, you know, I'm done crying about this. And as often as I can, I'll go and I'll speak about domestic violence. And I have. I contact people and say, look, if you need a guy to speak, I'd be more than happy to tell the story of my two nephews in the hope that by telling their story, somebody will hear it and think about advice that comes out of it. If you're going to leave, don't hang around and tell him because you don't know how he'll react. If you can, save some money. If you can't, that's fine. Go someplace that he can't find you with friends that aren't going to tell him and then sort your life out and play it forward. Because what I saw after that, so I get it, we raised, I don't know how many $1,000s. I want to say someplace between $60,000 and $90,000 because, you know, it was on ESPN that day. And so baseball fans around the country were, around the world were, you know, were mortified. And so anyway, we set up a charity, we coordinated to get the phone number of the domestic violence shelter in Sacramento. At the time, I don't know if it's still called WEAVE, but it was called WEAVE then. WEAVE stands for Women Escaping a Violent Environment. So I want to say the day after the funeral, they had invited me out just to look at the place because, you know, they were going to be the recipient of, I don't know, $80,000. And so I remember I'm standing in the foyer kind of hanging out, and it was a decent-sized complex in a residential area. So it was a house that they had built out. Offices in the front, a cipher lock that you had to be buzzed through to get in. So I was standing waiting there. I'm in a suit, and they buzz me in, and I meet these two women, and they introduce themselves, and you know they talk and asking about my sister and how everything is and whatnot. And she said, well, let us, you know, we can't say thank you enough for what you've named us as a beneficiary in their name, and let us show you around. And I said, okay. And I'd never been to a place like that. You know, I mean, again, in my own ignorance, you know, domestic violence isn't, does it touch middle class white people? Trust me, it does. And so we're walking down a kind of a wide hallway, and I'm third in line. They're talking to me kind of over their shoulder, and a young black kid, and I'll say he's probably 5, maybe 6, comes running down the hallway, and they stick their hands out, right? And so they're walking with their hands down, right, at their next to their thighs, and then they just stick their hand out, and they said, hey, and they said his name, Leonard or something, and he gives them 5, and then I said, hey, bud, and I stuck my hand out. He saw me, went to the other side of the hallway, and he just kept running. And I looked at him, I looked at them, and his turn wasn't slight, right? He veered. And I said, because I'm a stranger? And they said, no, because you're a man. And it was like, whoa. And so we walk around the corner, and there's this kind of kitchen area, big kitchen area, that opens up into kind of a TV playroom. So there's a couple of TVs on the walls, there's couches, there's some toys for little kids, and there's a like a kitchen table where you could, you know, feed your kids, and there's a I would say a big kitchen. So we and they were explaining, well, this is a kitchen area, and you know, we have, you know, the families that are staying here with us, you know, they come in, and the mothers prepare meals, and we try to make it like home, and blah blah blah. And so we walk in the kitchen. Here's a woman who's got in a dress, got a baby sitting on her hip, right, and she's kind of making something. And I remember she had blonde hair, and they said, "Hey, Jenny, we want you to meet Mike. You know, his sister. You know, her children were, you know, murdered, and they've raised money for us, and so we're just kind of showing them around." And she turned around, and you know, I'll never forget it, because you know, what is domestic violence? It's not slapping somebody, you know. And so Jenny's face, her right cheek had been caved in, and like most of the teeth on the right side of her face were gone. Her teeth in front were gone. And she put her mouth over her hand over her mouth, and she said to me, she said, "I don't look very good." And I said, "Don't worry about it. You look great." And she just smiled at me, and she just said, "Thank you for what you do. It's, you know, it's really necessary." And she said, "Hopefully we won't be here for too long." And, but it, for me, it was the indelible impression of domestic violence that I, you know, I was ignorant of. And so, whenever I can, you know, I tell the story of my two nephews, and I do that in the hopes that somebody will hear it. And it's happened to me on two different occasions where I've gotten emails from people. One was an email, and another was a phone call from somebody who said, "Hey, so-and-so wanted me to tell you that," and the email said the same thing, "because I listened to you and heard the story that you told, one time on the radio, one time in person, I took steps when I left that I think saved the lives of myself and my children, because I think that he would have reacted the same way that happened to your sister." And although we can't bring Tori and Tyler back, as good as it gets for us is telling their story and hopefully impacting lives. And so when somebody tells you that, "I think my three kids and I are alive because of hearing you," that means we're plus two. So we can't do anything about our two, but we can continue to try to make that number go up. So, domestic violence crosses racial lines, crosses any kind of financial line, and it's awful. And it's awful. And one of the reasons that people enjoy having me come speak is that I'm not the typical domestic violence speaker. I'm a guy, right? Marine, athlete, you know, when I was younger, certainly, not so much now. But so when I'm introduced, we want to introduce you to Mike, and they kind of run down my list of things I've done in my life. I'm not the normal guy that you see there at those events. And the story of my sister's story and my nephew's story is an incredibly powerful story with a terrible ending. And so, I mean, I resolved that I would tell it as often as I could so that we could hopefully add to that number. So if anybody out there listening ever needs a speaker that to talk about domestic violence to an audience, whether it be girls or, you know, my favorite audience is boys. Girls get it. Boys don't. Girls get it because, you know, as you go through you know, puberty, boys grow and they get big, right? And so girls at some point understand or have been, normally have been in a situation where they've been afraid of a guy and what they would do. So they get it. You don't have to explain it too much to women. Guys don't. We grow up, and most of us don't know a whole lot about domestic violence. It doesn't darken the doorstep of most families. And for a lot of families, when it does, they keep it a secret because they're ashamed of it. They're embarrassed of it. And so the only way you remedy that is you talk about it. And if you talk about it, what I liken it to is, you know, there was a day, and I talk about this relative to the Marine Corps, it's the exact same issue. There was a day when nobody picked up anybody's keys off a bar. Didn't do that. Drunk driving was a misdemeanor. Mothers Against Drunk Driving changed all that. And so after I tell the story, the thing that I leave, in particular the male audiences that I speak to, I leave them with is this. There's no doubt in my mind that my sister's husband told his friends, if that bitch thinks she's leaving me with her kid, with my kids, she's fucking crazy. I'll kill her ass. Okay? I know he said that to him. I won't tell you how I know, but I know. Nobody took him seriously. Nobody said, hey man, that's crazy. I need you to come talk to somebody. And so just as quickly as you would pick up somebody's car keys off a bar, were they drunk? You should intercede when there is the inkling or there is a suspicion, there are bruises or something that can't be explained that gives you the thought that something might be very wrong there. And all you got to do is reach your hand out to him and say, hey, man, can I talk to you? Are you okay? My wife and I saw the bruises on your wife. And I want to talk to you about that. And then just have an honest conversation about it. Because a community is nothing more than a congregation of families. And the community is as strong as its weakest family. And all that stuff, the way that anger plays out, can all be reprogrammed. Sometimes it's medication. Sometimes it's therapy. Sometimes it's both of them learning how to deal with it and not react violently. But you can deal with it. You can deal with it. But and I will tell you this, it's not something that I've never heard a man gloat about it. I've never had a man mention it. I had Marines, a lot of my Marines in, when I was on, I'm a lieutenant, the executive officer on the USS Ranger, the Marine detachment. My NCOs were sitting around one day, and I will tell you this, the majority of them were black. And they were talking about their dad, how their dad used to tighten, quote unquote, tighten up their mom. And I don't know why the conversation they were, I just walked in the middle of it. So this would have been 1987, 1988. And they were talking about, they were having this conversation about if their mom burned dinner, if the house wasn't clean, if she got home late, you know, all these things. And they just kind of, oh, my dad, blah, blah, blah. And then you'd hear some say, my dad didn't do any of that shit, man. And like, oh, you know, it was common in, you know, where I live. You know, you could hear it going on next door. You know, old man be pissed. You know, and they would tell these stories. And you sat there and you listen, you're like, wow. 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 So again, my challenge to especially the men that I speak to is don't be afraid of it, man. Do not be afraid of it. Stick your hand out and help that guy. And then be vigilant about if you see it again. And don't be afraid to get other people involved. You know what? In order to save a life, you might ruin a friendship.
But at the end of the day, you won't have to live with the burden that I know some guys in Sacramento have to live with because they didn't do what they should have done, which is help somebody. And, you know, we talk about that relative to post-traumatic stress in combat, that eternity is a long time to deal with not doing the right thing. And in particular, if your negligence contributed to whatever outcome that you're talking about. So don't be afraid to intervene. Don't be afraid to pick up somebody's car keys. Right? Don't be afraid to ask somebody, hey, man, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. What do you mean? I mean those bruises on your wife. That's what I mean. And you know, and you may get just a cold stare. And as I said, don't be afraid of it. Okay, because my nephews were two, you know, beautiful little kids. The older one liked to play with Barbies, and the younger one was a little maniac. They were beautiful young kids, and you know, they were obviously the light of my sister's life, and gone at the ages of 4 and 6. So anyway, 21 years ago. I think this week. So as I said, you know, in my life, I've been contacted twice that because people heard that story, they may still be alive. So as I said, if you need anybody ever to speak about domestic violence, I have a story to tell. My family has a story to tell. And hopefully in telling that story, I certainly honor the memory of my two beautiful nephews. I honor the strength of my sister and her fight with post-traumatic stress. And she, you know, she tells these terrible stories of, you know, you're having a good day. And again, my sister doesn't deal with seeing other people killed. She deals with seeing her children, you know, shot in the head. And holding them, waiting for paramedics to get there. I mean, I don't know anything, you know, in my life that my peers have experienced in Iraq and Afghanistan that's even close. You know, so she'll tell these stories where, you know, she's having a pretty normal day and she's flipping through a planner and all of a sudden she flips to a page that they've scribbled on, right? This is, you know, in the aftermath that they had scribbled on and she had yelled at them for scribbling in her planner. Right, all of a sudden, poof, that memory comes, and you hear them, their voices. Or she's having a good day, and she stops at a stop sign, at a light. A car pulls up next to her, and there's kids in the car, and they're trying to sing that Hakuna Matata song that no kids can sing the right words to, right? And it's always you laugh when you hear the kids trying to sing it, and the goofy things they say. All of a sudden, that horrible memory of her kids trying to sing it. How empty her home is, right? The silence that is now deafening in her home. And so all of that. So anyway. and I don't say that to be such a downer, but 21 years ago, this week, is my recollection that it happened. And on my mind today. So I figured I'd share it with the group. So good for you. Anyway, thanks for listening today. This program repeats itself momentarily, so don't touch that dial if you missed. My thanks to John Ubaldi for coming on. Tomorrow, Grant Newsham is going to join us. We're going to talk about the latest from get Grant's thoughts on the Chinese actions. And a lot of people are very critical of the president and his rhetoric. But we have never seen the Chinese take the steps that they're taking. So I'm curious to hear what Grant has to say about whether he believes that the president's blunt talk is part of all of this, or if it's something else. So, with all that said today, thanks for listening. This program, as I said, repeats itself. And my final thought today is, you know, domestic violence, it's all over the place. Don't be afraid to be that guy. to interject yourself into somebody else's business. Because you have no idea whether you are going to save their life. And again, you don't do it to be confrontational or what, or I wouldn't. And at times I've asked, I haven't been confrontational. It's an extended hand. Hey man, do you need help? Do you need help? So there you have it. Get after it. Have a great day on a Wednesday. All Marine Radio, over and out.